Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, I don't think Stacks and Jacks. I'm tomorrow, Ricky on the board, SP Futures. Up 17, NASDAQ is up 78. Looks like we're going to do all-time records today. We're pushing it big time. We got money pouring into the system. We've got an ebbing of global tensions, which is good, obviously. And the sky's the limit, it looks like, on the market. And some of the numbers are just, you don't even want to think about them. I guess you just want to buy. That's the thing. But you don't even want to look at what the numbers might even mean. But it's That's just the way we are today. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
I'm looking at the chart here of NVIDIA, and in the last, where are we? 6:20, which wasn't very long ago. A week? The stock is up $13. Okay, that's fine. Stocks go up $13. They have, just in terms of the money we're talking about, which is hard for anybody to get their arms around, $13, 25 billion shares outstanding. So that's 250 and another 75, $325 billion dollars market cap, which I think would put it more valuable than the biggest stock in the world in 2000. And that's in 7 days, Kevin. Money for nothing and your chicks for free?
No, you're concerned.
Yeah, I mean, because the weird part is a lot of people are cutting coupons in the aisle. This is an amazing, I'm a little bit concerned. I mean, it's at some level, it's when you reach some level, money is almost like water now. I mean, this stuff is just, the valuations are just absolutely to the sky. Now, you know, and then you talk about, you know, basketball teams, and we talked a lot last week, after this. Why don't they take this NBA draft and make it like 4 weeks? How about a pick a night or something? Good Lord. I watched a little bit of that only because there was no Cubs on in the place I was last night, and it was a second round. I'm like, this is the second round? What are they doing? But, what happened? There's just two rounds? Everybody else just goes and tries to sign as a free agent or what?
Yeah, they've been two rounds. They've been limited to two rounds for a lot of years. Your chances of making an NBA team, even a second rounder has a very, very slim chance of doing it.
Well, every... so.
And then every once in a while, some undrafted free agent will come along and we'll do fine and we'll make a team and we'll be a contributor, but that's so unusual.
Well, they have so most teams do not average two rookies. Are there, because you get the what do you call it, scout? The scout team squad, right? So you actually your roster can be what?
They're not like football where you have a practice squad.
The Bulls.
They have some guys who might have two-way contracts so that they can go up and down between the G League and. In the NBA team, so they have some of that, and they have some. They have the whole G League, so that there are some people that come up. I don't know if they still do 10-day contracts like they once did.
But you don't draft somebody and put them in the G League. They go there themselves, and then how does that work?
No, there are people who do the two-way contract limits the number of times you can go back and forth between the two, but you make more money than the average G leaguer. I'm not. It's been a while since I paid any attention to it because In the end, it doesn't really matter. It's you use the G League to cover for injuries. Basically, is what they do.
Well, I'm trying to get to a number that maybe makes some sense, at least to me. If there's 12 people on the roster any given night, right? I think that's the number.
It's 12 or 13, but yeah.
And it seems like the Bulls had like another four people, like you're talking about, that were sort of theirs in the G League. So you're probably up to, say, 16 that you sort of control, for lack of a better term. And we're saying, on average,
except those guys aren't protected either. If some other team needs a G League player and it's not under a specific kind of contract like the two-way with the parent team, then they can sign elsewhere.
Well, I'm just trying to get a number of, if the number that you sort of control is 15, we're only talking about an average of two first-year players, then, is what the draft's telling you.
At most, yeah. Some teams not even.
I remember, boy, talk about showing your age. I remember when hockey had only six teams. I remember Lloyd Pettit, who probably still to this day was the best hockey announcer ever, saying that the hardest thing in all of sports was for somebody to break into the NHL. Because they had like two or three rookies a year, league-wide or something.
Yeah.
Might have been more than that, but even if it was one a team, it's six people. It's not very many.
And you were in those days essentially limited to the United States and Canada. You might occasionally get someone to come over from Sweden or someplace like that, whereas now the NHL is, and this is the thing with the NBA too, and this is why it's so hard for true rookies, you know, the true draftee rookies to make it if they're not first round picks. And even if they are first round picks, if you're first round pick for the last few teams drafting, you're probably signed, you'll probably be on the team. But there's a really, really good chance that you're not going to play and you're not going to be there next year for even those guys. Honestly, the NBA is such an international game now it's really hard. And then even the draft, you start looking at the draft, just take a look at the Bulls. They drafted a guy from France and they drafted a guy from Australia.
Well,
neither of them coming out of U.S. college basketball.
It's quite different. I mean, I would just kind of get bits and pieces of it. But last year, I think we talked about the first 15 people, like less than half of them were from colleges, and a lot of them were from the developmental league.
A lot of them did their 1 year in the G League, played for G League Unite. That's last year's Bulls first-round draft pick, who looks like a really good player, Bezdelic. That was his route.
Well, the last night or the last two nights, and I don't know why they're going back to this, because I think it was, with a couple of exceptions, I think it was a total failure in terms of personal development and people development. Now, of course, you got LeBron, you had Moses Malone. Something like 8 of the top 10 picks were freshmen.
Yeah.
The idea that you're sprinkling the 18-year-olds in the league, it's bad for, I think it's bad for pro ball and it's surely bad for college ball. Of course, what's left in college ball? I mean, if it wasn't for gambling in the NCAA, it wouldn't, is gambling.
Actually, I don't think college basketball has suffered all that much from it. There are plenty of good players. Now, it's always been true that just because you're a really good college basketball player, just because, you can average 18 points a game and you're a starter at a major conference school, you're not making the NBA. Really good players have been not making the NBA for a long time.
Yeah, well, I agree. I'm just saying that some of the people that they're drafting are, let's put it this way. College ball is kind of better if there's a rivalry for people for a while, I think. But, I don't think anybody cares, as long as you can bet on it. I just wonder where this is all headed, Kevin, because evaluations, I wonder where NVIDIA's heading. I mean, is it going to be worth another, $500 billion in the next 2 weeks? I mean, what does that even mean? I mean, at a 10 PE, it means the place has got to make another $50 billion in 2 weeks just to stay where they are, PE. You know, is there that much money for them to make that much dough? I mean, on the show, I think everything does. It's the same issue that I question the Lakers making $199 million last year and the valuation's $10 billion. But I really question the Clippers, who lost money last year, and they claim their valuation's $8 billion. Hey, you should pay $8 billion for this place. Why? How much money do they make? Well, they actually lose money. Duh. Well, granted, if you can give me some huge projection going forward, the next 5 years, at the end of 5 years, you're making $1 billion a year, then I'm going to say, well, I'm in. You know, I've got to suffer for a few years, but it looks like your numbers are correct. But I don't know if anybody can spin that one out there, can they? And I don't know if anybody can spin NVIDIA out there, you know, making that much money 2 years from now. I mean, what is the time frame here that people don't even look? I think it comes down to if the inflation rate. I mean, I think it's Carl and Hal are right. If some people can borrow less than the inflation rate, the stuff always goes up. But I don't. This constant fight between Trump and Powell. Maybe you can explain this to me. I don't really. I mean, from my history of studying monetary stuff, which nobody should do because all it does is piss you off. What Powell has done in the last 6 to 9 months, because we trade this all day long for our clients. We put people in T-bills if they want to be in, if they want to make money and have it safe. And plus, T-bills are terrific because if 2 days later you want to buy some stock, you can sell a T-bill in an instant, and you never lose money on it. Because, when I say you never lose money, if it's a 90-day T-bill, you pay something less than the $1,000, okay? You pay like $99 or something. Whatever it is, you pay less. It's an implied interest. You don't actually get a check. But if you sell it a month from now, it's going to be worth a little bit more, because now it only has 2 months to go. So let's say you break even. You can get out of that in a second. Those rates 9 months to a year ago, Kevin, were probably over 5. Then they went down to 4.5. Now, this isn't exactly the Fed funds rate that the Fed's talking about, but it's clearly an indicator. It's right there. And in the last 3-4 months that he and Trump have been fighting, it's down to 4.19. So what Powell is afraid of is, in order to get it down, you have to put money into the system, which, by the way, he is. In my opinion, he's putting way too much in. He's averaging now almost 5.5%, and that is not how you fight inflation at all. Matter of fact, that's how you make inflation. But his concern is, if he puts any more in and drops the short-term rate even more, which is what Trump wants him to do, what you also see in the last year is the 10- and 30-year rates have gone up. Because if he starts doing that more and doesn't start buying all the assets like they did during COVID, all you're going to tell people, there's a few people around like me going, wait a minute, looks to me like that's going to cause the inflation to go up, and even though it'll cause short-term rates to go down momentarily, all it's going to do is scoot the 10 and 30 year out, because nobody would want to lend you money for 3.5% or 4% if they think the inflation rate's going to be 5. So what he's saying that is, it, instead of using monetary terms, which I don't know why he doesn't, instead of saying we've done that for 9 months, we have lowered the lower rate, and by the way, all we've done is goose the upper rate. What Trump is asking him to do is absolutely impossible, to lower the rates by 3%. He could put $4 trillion in this month and probably drop the lower rate down to 1 or 1.5, like they did before. But all he's going to do is run the 10 and 30 year rate way up. So would Trump. But the weird part is, I don't know why they're having the fight, because he actually has lowered the rate by the 0.25% that he refuses to lower in the meeting. So I mean, he actually has gone from 4.25 to 4.5 on the Fed funds rate, which is 4.33 on average. Well, now the Treasury rate is down to 4.19. So the actual federal funds rate is probably a little lower than that. So he already has lowered it. So is this fight just for TV, or what is this? What are we doing here?
Ultimately, he wants the longer term rates down. I think that's ultimately the goal. I don't, you know, you just made a case that if you get short term rates down, then you're going to look at longer term rates up, and that could be right. But I really think they have a lot of debt, a lot of U.S. debt to reprice, to roll over, and he wants to get it in a longer term at a lower price.
Well, people in hell want ice water, Kevin. That's not the way it works. You don't pour money into the system, create inflation, and have the rates go down.
Okay. I'm just telling you what I think the goal ultimately is.
The goal is to spend less money.
It might be a complete folly, but that's what the goal is.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just you look at the how this money's flipping around, and then you've got all this stuff with the bitcoins and all the other stuff. What do you think the total wealth is in all those coins now? It's got to be $3 trillion. What if something goes wrong there?
Ouch! Then.
Yeah, I don't. This is all kind of uncharted. Well, I guess it isn't. I suppose it's no different than a stock bubble, right? You know, people buy up stocks that aren't worth anything, or tulips, or whatever it is. It's really it's kind of an interest.
Tulips are really nice flowers.
But yeah, I'd say the somebody, you know, I actually had a conversation with a guy at the Tripoli Tap of all places. Got a lot of dough too. He was in Bitcoin. He's one of his buddies was in there, and it very interesting take, Kevin. I listened to everybody, and it's. If you listen to everybody of all different walks of life, you learn a lot. You know, it's pretty interesting. The guy says, I don't know if he's right, but I didn't really know the answer. He goes, name the two biggest industries in the world. Well, I probably would have guessed oil number one, which is what he had as number one, but I'm not sure I'm right there. I think it might be. And he says the second is drugs, illegal drugs. He says all those guys they need something that they can go back and forth in it, nobody can catch. And I said, wait a minute. Every Bitcoin transaction can be traced. He goes, yeah, but they aren't. And he goes, enough people want some alternative way to do business to where they're going to keep the thing up. Now, the question is, when I started in this business, whole different mentality coming. People felt that nobody... And maybe this is the University of Chicago school talking. It turned out to be wrong. Who knows? People thought that even the market was too big even for the government to mess around with. Where you had all kinds of people like Japan, and we did it for a while. I'm not saying we still aren't. Where people would go in and they'd say there was yen was going down. Okay, so the Japanese would step in and they'd buy a bunch of yen with their dollars and attempt to save the yen. Okay, they might have done, pick a number, $10 billion worth. Well, the international currency trade every day is like 10 times or 100 times what the governments are putting in. At the end of the day, all they did was have a crappy trade. They bought it at one level, and guess what? It still went down, and now they got a losing trade. But governments don't care if they get a losing trade. They do it for a purpose, right? It seemed all the evidence was that even governments, certainly on a short-term basis, weren't bigger than the market. And now everybody's convinced that If a certain amount of people want to make Bitcoin stay at 110,000, because a lot of those guys have made more money on the Bitcoin than on the drugs, or more wealth, and which is really something. Now, from my experience, I would say, wow, the last thing you want is to have your money in an asset like that, because it's ripe for a cliff. But the cliff doesn't ever seem to come. And this guy's younger than me, bright guy, got a lot of dough. And what business he was in, he says it's never going to happen. Because the people that are doing it now are more powerful than the people used to be. And if they want to keep it up, even if it's worth nothing, because keep running it up and make even more wealth, they have the ability to do it. And listen to this, Kevin. I can't say he's wrong, at least up till now. But it seems a lot different world than the one maybe we studied about, doesn't it? You could create an asset and just run it up and make yourself wealth, and you're so big it'll never go the other way.
Nice work if you can get it.
I know. I mean, what do you think about that, though? I mean, what would you ask, if somebody, people in your classes ask that question, what would you say?
I would tell them they're not in economics class.
Well, that would be interesting. I thought you knew everything. What?
I tell them, ask the other professor. I'm not the guy who can tell them.
But, you know, it's really, I think a lot of stuff in the market is overvalued. Dan and I had this conversation, my brother, yesterday. And he goes, I just can't believe we just keep running up, and you look at the valuations of some of these places. I said, Dan, that's your MBA, that's your good education telling you that, but ask yourself this. If there are stocks in the world that aren't even stocks, trade-like stocks, Bitcoin, something coin, this coin, that coin, and they can run up every day, why can't a stock be overpriced? I mean, it depends on which end you look from it, right?
But oh, yeah, I get it. And I didn't mean, you know, well, actually, I did mean to kind of blow off your question, but that's, it's not, you know, for me, it's not an area of expertise, and it's not, it's also not topical for the kinds of things I teach. So it's not, it really isn't, you know, I'm not qualified to make any expert commentary on that.
Well, but it's, you think you're not involved, but you are. And when I say that, you spend an inordinate amount of time helping people get from the $15 an hour job 3 years later with you and your gang, for lack of a better term, at your school, having that person in the 30-hour an hour job, and maybe 35 or 40 and maybe management. I mean, that's what you're doing for people. Yet it looks like at the end of the 3 years, the $40 is chump change, or it looks like it's going to be chump change, and you can't even buy lunch with it at $40. You're better off than you were at 15, but you're not gaining on it. And that's a tough America. That's not our America, but it looks like it's going. I'm not blaming it on anybody who's in there for 6 months or anything. I'm saying this has been the direction for a while, and it's not healthy. I mean, you're right. The best you can do, make sure the person at 15 is now making 40, which I think you guys do a great job at. But still, at the end of 3 years, the 40, somebody's going to start, I'm getting anywhere. There's people in the building here that do side jobs and stuff and work here. They go, the more I make, the more I don't get anywhere. I mean, I just get nowhere. Every time I go in for my, I work 2 days on a weekend. I make $600. I walk in and I got, you know, a starter out in my car, and it's $600. And it takes the guy 2 hours. And it took me all weekend to make that dough. I mean, we're seeing really, really crazy stuff here that, yes, you're helping, I'm helping, I think everybody's trying to help, but the numbers are blowing by us so fast we can't, I don't think we can get there. I mean, I don't know how you stop that.
Well, no, I don't think you can. There are ways to stop it. But, you know, a lot of that, you know, you're going to talk about it next week when the jobs report comes out. Well, does it come out next week? I don't think.
You know, I'm not. It must. It must come out on the 3rd. Probably comes out. I mean, you know what? I don't think it's come out on the 4th of July, but we have had holidays where it's come out on the holiday. I mean, finish your point, and I'll find out.
All the trends, and you see the number of people that are sitting out, and we do have a lot of incentives in our economy for people to sit out. So, you know, you got to start removing that. You have to start making, labor. You have to start making work worthwhile to people who where it's not worthwhile now. And a lot of that is depressed wages. And I know you don't want to get into immigration on this, but that's a big contributor to it. You have millions of jobs that are set aside that are working at below market, below what a market rate would be.
I think that number is way, way less than people are being told. And because a lot of people that I see
I'm not sure what people are being told, but I know that when, if you go,
Thursday, they're coming out Thursday.
You want to get 2 million people. Do you think it's 2 million people?
I don't know how many people there are. Neither does anybody, I don't think.
Well, yeah, because we fight so hard to suppress that information. You may remember the last census, and how hard a battle it was that eventually Trump lost, because he just wanted a simple question on the census that said, "Are you a U.S. citizen?" I just wanted to get a gauge on how many people are citizens working here. That wasn't a question of are you here legally or illegally.
Why can't you just figure out how many people are here, figure out how many people are citizens, and do the math? Which I've been doing all week, by the way.
You have a whole lot of uncountable people.
All right, but you know,
they're all off book. How do you count that?
The people here that are working, all right, I mean, in every area it's different. Okay, and I was looking yesterday about how many people actually came over the border in the last 7 or 8 years. And talk about a mishmash of stuff. By the way, we are, all that stuff, if you didn't hear me or not, next Thursday we are coming out with all this stuff. So we have to try and get Carl on a little bit on Thursday. So, but I mean, the policy that was put through in, I don't know, 2021 or something, when Biden was in office, and regarding, they don't count people that get through that they don't know that they got through.
Right, because they don't count.
They don't, because they can't count them. They count border encounters. But because of the policy change, where if you encountered somebody, you could immediately deport them. Said, "Hey, buddy, you swam over. You got to go back." There was no accounting for how many times you caught the same guy. So your border encounters, yeah, might have been.
The habit was, well, you're in the country. Here's your court date. We'll release.
No, it's not. It's not what.
And away you go.
It's not what was happening, according to the stuff, yeah, I was reading. There might have been some of that where people were demanding asylum or might have already been here.
It was a lot.
Okay. I'm just telling you what I read, not what I hear. I'm not watching it, listening to this on Newsmax. I'm saying I didn't know anything about this until I read it. So something I just picked up.
This has nothing to do with
it. Something I just picked up, that if five guys got caught swimming across the river, they said, you got to go back, and they sent them back right away. That was part of the policy under Biden. They didn't let him in. They didn't give him a court date. They sent him right back. Now, the next day, if the same five guys swim over again, what? I'm just telling you, I mean, you can tell me I read wrong. They said this next morning, if the same five guys, you sent them back, now you're up to 10. So they didn't even take names or anything on these people. They sent them back. That was part. Now, maybe the good part is you sent them back. Bad part is the count is that you caught the same idiot 10 times. He's counted as 10 people. So I don't really know what the numbers are, and I don't think they do either. Because they don't count the people that got through, which is bizarre. Well, I don't know how you do that. How do you count the guy who's not caught?
I'm telling you, this is where you're wrong, is that, you know, the change in policy was you get to stay in the country until you get a court date. Here's your court date. See you in 5 years. And then, you know, people who were flown into different cities, were turned over to NGOs that were allowed to find them work, but the work was always at substandard wages. I mean, that was the big deal. What was the city in Ohio that we were talking about?
Well, were they eating the dogs and cats?
Where that came up, but that wasn't the real issue as far as I'm concerned. Is the number of people who were, who were working, it crowded out all of the people who lived there out of the labor force, because they could work at substandard wages, and then on top of it, the NGO that placed them there, because they've been given, the charge to do it, was taking its share of the wage. So the people who were there were working at much lower wages than the market. Net of the NGO wage that they were getting, it was almost like a temporary employment agency, and they were getting a substandard wage, and everybody else was being crowded out of the labor
market. I'm just telling
you, that was happening all over.
Tell me how, without even reading what I'm, everybody,
you like to trivialize it, but
I'm not trivializing anyone. Here's USA facts, okay? The encounter levels around September 2020, the number of detected crossings, these are detected, began to increase and remain high along the southwest U.S. border. During this time into 2021, the recidivism rate, the likelihood that an individual attempted to cross in the U.S. more than once a single year, nearly quadrupled compared to the pre-pandemic levels. The 2023 Congressional Research Report attributes primarily to Title 42, a policy active from March 20 to May 2023, which is not anymore, which made it easier for the government to expel migrants at the border, but did not penalize repeated crossing attempts. Now, you're saying this is all bullshit.
I'm saying it's cherry-picked statistics.
What do you mean cherry-picked? All they said was, because you kicked the guy back and forth, you have no idea how many times you cut. It was so easy to kick the guy back and forth, according to this Title 42. That's what I'm not saying this is a good policy. I'm just telling you what it was.
Yeah, did they not discontinue Title 42?
Biden did. The total number of detected crossings, which do not differentiate between a new and repeat crossing, continued to rise from 20 to 2023. I'm not arguing with you about that. They peaked in December at 2023 at 249,000 before decreasing throughout 2024. So then they stopped going down. I don't know if they just what they did then, if they kicked people. I'm just saying for a while.
What they did was they created an app that would allow you to put your name into the app, and then you'd show up, and then you were already pre-processed, and that way they didn't have to treat you as a border encounter. They treated you as in its own separate category. They had all kinds of shenanigans going on there to try and do
those people, and those Democrats.
You talked with Lou yesterday about why you would do that. One of the biggest reasons, and Lou didn't mention this, is because once you start flooding, start flooding your cities with immigrants, and then you count them in the next census. It doesn't even have to do with voting and citizenship. It has to do more with what do you get in the census, and therefore how many congressional seats do you get?
I really think that people in Wyoming must know that these people are their enemies. They're screwing them off.
How do you jump to that? You're like arguing with an ex-wife.
The idea that nobody. Nope. There's always been people here.
They have enemies. Who's saying enemies?
What do you mean? They're stealing my wages. They're stealing my wages. I'd be making a lot more. I wouldn't be in the trailer home drinking a beer here if these people weren't here.
Well, I'm glad you're in a trailer home.
Yeah, there's how far are we going to? Everybody knows that there is a refugee problem worldwide, and we have somewhat of a migration problem here. By the way, it's gone down a lot.
Yeah. And yeah, no shit, it has.
Thank God for Trump. It was going down anyway.
Let's not even bother. This is turning into a stupid argument.
I've never once said that the problem isn't a problem.
Thank you for Trump crap. That's just nonsense.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's the best. Okay, but the point
That's not worthy discussion. Forget it. Change the subject. How about them Cubs?
Yeah. How about? The whole idea it is morphed, Kevin, from the person who swam over illegally, which I never agreed with that. I'm with you guys on that. You can't have a border that's open like that. I understand that. It is morphed into some of the people I've talked to into every single person who's here that is not a citizen is somehow stealing from us.
Well, no, but I don't know who you talk to, Tom, because that's not what the attitude is. The attitude is that we can't accommodate this many workers because it creates all kinds of other issues around us. And you can say, well, Chicago's settled down; it's no big deal. They spent like $338 million.
Oh, by whose count, Mayor Johnson's?
Yeah, actually, by the published city of Chicago numbers. And so when you spend $338 million on that, how's the Chicago budget handling that?
I'm going to say that $300 of that got intercepted before it made it to any migrant, which is, I guess, good policy.
Fine, but the city spent it.
They say that. I don't believe any of these people say.
I know. They can afford it in Chicago.
I didn't say that. It was a problem for a while, and after a while, it's somehow melted in. My point is that the people here in Chicago, if the city wasn't dying anyway, 60,000 people willing to work coming into a metropolitan area of 6 million people might be a bother. But God, Kevin, it's not the thing that is screwing a whole place up like people have blown it into. I never once said it isn't a problem. It's the size of the problem. I mean, right now, I've talked to people that say, boy, what if somebody had been here for, and I'm sure you know some, and we don't want to name them, that have been here for 30, 40 years, paying into Social Security, they're not going to get paid. Lou yesterday said, so what? They don't deserve it. What do you mean they don't deserve it? They paid in. They're not going to get Medicare either.
I would quote it exactly that way with what Lou said.
He said they don't deserve it. They've benefited by being here, and if it costs them a little dough and they don't get the money back, that's tough toenails. And I'm whatever, but
well, it's really a consequence of not following the law.
Follow
the law, come in legally, you're going to be able to cash in.
But Well, no, I'm talking about people who came in legally, who maybe overstayed their visa or something. By the way, Musk did that, by the way. Why does everybody think that if somebody pays into Social Security, why doesn't the Social Security, if it's a fake card, why don't they send the money back? I mean, these are simple questions, Kevin. Okay, we know this guy Kevin O'Neill has a fake number. We never issued him that number. By the way, Kevin's been sending us a check for 40 years. Why not call Ivy Tech and say, who the hell is this Kevin guy? We don't have a number of this guy. But they take the check. I find this amazing to me that if I had a client who sent me a check, of course we don't get the money, it goes to RBC. If I had a client who sent me a check and didn't have an account number, how the hell could I take the money for 40 years? I mean, that's insane for anybody private to do that, yet if the government does it, it's okay. What if somebody sent you tuition money and the guy never showed up? Wouldn't you send him a check back?
Endorse the DOGE process. I don't know if they're going to get all the way to Social Security collections, but they did start tracing all kinds of dead end stuff, the money that was flying around going to someplace, but nobody knows where. So yeah, I'm on board with that.
It's been a policy for way back when it was a sign of the traitor. Those guys were all dead. They're on the place. They would say they always had people that had Social Security cards. They would say they knew people in the industry where people had cards where the numbers were all ones. I read once that there were all kinds of people that had all zeros, Kevin. And the check lands out there, they just take it.
If you want to complain about the government doing stupid stuff and not handling money properly, I'm right with you on that.
How hard is it to call somebody up and say, hey, this number is kind of fake. What are you doing over there? I'll bet not one of those checks ever went back. It's an interesting world we live in. The more you learn about it, the more kind of screwed up you are. I mean, on both sides of the politics. When you talk about it at the end of the day, when people rag about inflation, how many politicians through the years since you and I have been alive have ragged about inflation and blamed it on this guy or that guy or the other guy, and yet the single biggest benefactor of inflation is the government? I mean, how many people, I'll bet this, because when I was talking to you earlier about people who people like you in education have helped, if you had somebody who had a family and came to your classes, I'm going to say 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and was making 40 grand and now is making 55, one would think you've helped them tremendously, right? And you have. And, my hat's off to you and the people who helped. Between him now not qualifying for Obamacare, being in the new tax bracket, and the inflation that's going on in the last 5 years, do you think he's ahead or behind?
I think there's a whole bunch of us who are behind in many ways.
Yeah.
And I'm not arguing with you about that. But I don't even know how we got into this part of it.
Well, I'm saying, but these are all, we're trying to on some level, and maybe I'm exaggerating too much on my end, we're trying to on some level say that somehow or another, if other people weren't here, the guy'd be making 70. And that's just not true. That doesn't mean that people should be here, but to put that kind of a number that, somehow they're, it's like the white guy who says he never could go to law school because they let the black guy in Harvard ahead of him. What do you mean? There's a million other law schools. What's the matter with you? Oh, no, I wanted to go to Harvard. I mean, at some point, things become an excuse. Now,
I've seen people with that excuse, but on the other hand, if put 2 million people into the economy, pay them a sort of standard wage, pay them cash, and I know this is going on. I know because I've talked to people who are victims of it, who don't get overtime because their employers say, you're working it, I'm paying you cash, and you have to do this, and no, I'm not paying you time and a half, And if you don't like it, yeah, it's okay. We can turn you over. We can turn you in.
How come? I don't know how the... I had a client, unfortunately, recently passed. I think he had a... I'm not positive. I think he had a sprinkler company. And in some areas, people wanted to pay him cash. And he says to me one day over coffee, he says, you know, 30 years ago, I could pay people cash. Now I can't. First of all, I'm not gonna have, you know, 8 union guys and 3 guys off the street paying cash. First of all, I can't do that. I won't do that. And secondly, nobody wants cash. You can't even rent an apartment now if you don't have a paycheck. Forget it. It's not even buy a house now, Kevin. If you don't have a payroll thing, nobody rents you an apartment. I mean, I think that some of that has sailed now. And how much of it is
I disagree, because a lot of people who are in the country illegally will latch onto somebody who is legal, and that way you rent the apartment that way.
Well, I understand the part about the guys hanging at the Home Depot and somebody getting them to, you know, whatever, cut the lawn, clean out the garage, and pay them cash. That's not, first of all, I never see a white guy there wanting to do the same thing. And it's not like somebody says, I'll clean your, it's such a small piece. It's like somebody coming down my street offering a shovel of snow. What am I doing? What am I supposed to say? No, and at some level it's happening, and it always has. I don't know that it's reached the point where, here the people that I think might be here illegally, they're all getting paid the same as everybody else, Kevin. Now maybe Chicago just, I think Chicago might just have such a shortage of labor that maybe we are unique, and that it is more widespread than I see. I mean, Lou's probably right. In Denver, it probably is somewhat of a different story. But here, they're making the same amount, even if they're illegal or not. And guess what? You're giving them a check. I mean, I don't see that incredible craziness that maybe was around 30 years ago. At least here I don't. I mean, which isn't to say that in Phoenix or someplace, you know, that's the way it's still working. It might be. You know, I don't know how somebody who gets paid cash now even can live. Unless you say they're piling in with family members or something like that, but I don't know. It's just goofy stuff. I just wonder. But in terms of the economy itself, Kevin, I think we need to right the ship. We have to stop pouring money in the system. We have to stop doing this, because the people cannot handle inflation. It's the cruelest tax of all.
And what have I told you before? They got this, you know, this big beautiful bill, and I suspect it will pass. And they had a little bit of cutting in there, but I said, you know, it's got to have two or three trillion in there just to have a minor dent in it, because you know half of what's going to happen is just going to be a accounting gimmickry and no real cuts. So yeah, we have to do that, and we have to start taking the medicine for that, and we're not done.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't know if you were listening today. I was talking to Dan about this, and the last time when the first bill went through, it was the COVID thing had just started, and the big thing. And you've mentioned a few times how you believe that the first, when this thing first went through, the big Trump's tax cut went through with Trump in the Congress, and it wasn't just his, went through, how it saved money for everybody. So my brother, since we couldn't do anything on a weekend during COVID or anything, a buddy that does tax returns, so Dan is, you know, he's got a guy, he's a guy who always be doing something, right? So on Saturday, he's helping the guy do tax returns. And he says, I did about 30 of them, and everybody, especially everybody who was Republican, was convinced they were going to get, you know, made the same amount of money as the year before. Because they were within like 2%, and they were blaming me for not knowing how to do the return. Because at the end of the day, they didn't save anything. You know, this went up, that went down, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, it was the tax number was almost the exact same as the year before. These are people that are, you know, in the $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year bracket. He goes, they thought they were in this big, you know, they should be getting like $4,000 back or something. He goes, it was the same number. Whatever the first one was, between...
That they changed the withholding table, so people weren't withholding as much. A lot of people saw it in their weeklies, even though they did not have a refund coming.
He didn't see that
was a big deal at the time because they were saying, "Oh, well, you should have told me. I would rather have the refund."
I'm saying he's not talking about the refund. He's talking about the actual tax year over year was within like 1%. And it wasn't some big savings like was told it was going to be. I mean, by the time that's why it's when you talk about dropping. Remember when we were young, all interest was deductible, right? And then somewhere along the line, somebody lowered the rate. I forget what even president was. Lowered the rate and said, "Well, we're going to get rid of this interest deduction," and that was the quid pro quo. Now the problem comes, Kevin, when you move the rate back up, and you don't give the other stuff back. You don't get back to the same place, do you? And if you lower the rate from 50 to 35 and then go back to 40, some would say, well, we're still down 10. You probably aren't, are you? Because there were some givebacks all around the rest of the mess, right?
Yeah, but I hate the tax code anyway, so,
Well, it's part of it is not so good, and part of it is an attempt to stop workarounds, which never seemed to find a workaround. And
yeah, I know. Every time we do, we find a new workaround or the workaround.
At the end of the day, there used to be a... Boy, how illegal is this, Kevin?
By the way, I've dealt with that inside businesses, inside corporations, and how their accounting systems are set up. They're set up to create all kinds of perverse incentives and all kinds of things like that. Or I say, just make it simple. Set this up as a recurring charge. Do this, do that. They don't.
No.
They have all kinds of convoluted intercompany charges, and it's annoying as hell. So this is just the way finance people seem to like to work.
Well, I remember telling you, I don't know if it's been a long time, but when they had the rules for the trading floor, back when there was a real trading floor, they have like a list of rules that people made. They tried to imagine all the crap people would try and pull, right? Which is really hard to do because, nobody can really imagine what somebody else can imagine. And at the end of the day, Kevin, the last rule was something along the line of anything that would go against the just and equitable principles of trade, which was a catch-all. And I got to believe the Supreme Court would say, that's not a good one. But that's... If it smelled, if we didn't think of it specifically, if it smelled, it was wrong, and we could get you for it. You know what? And on one level, you sit there and go, thank God there was something like that. If somebody thought up something that wasn't one of the top, part of the Ten Commandments, that you needed an 11th one, well, they had one. If it was against the just and equitable principles of trade, it was no good. okay, you couldn't use... it did stuff like if you can't take an order over the phone in the pit. Well, if somebody popped, got a message on his, before there were cell phones, what are those little beepers to do an order? It'd say, wait a minute, that's against the just and equitable principles. Even though there's no specific law against beepers, you're guilty. And it's, on some level, it sort of makes sense, but... The reason why the tax code's not simple, and the reason why I argue constantly against my bro, Hal, and everybody else, that if you just say, well, if we went to a value-added tax, everything would be okay, I'd say no one. People find a way to jab that system too, right? Whatever it is, they'll think of it. I mean, there needs to be something that says, okay, 90% of your revenues in the U.S., 90% of your taxes are in the U.S., they're not in South Ireland. Give me a break. And yet we don't have something like that, do we?
Yeah, we're South Ireland, new country.
Well, what was the what was the area that was it the South Docks or the South something something South was the South Seaport? What was the area that was the economic free zone, a tax free zone in Ireland? Was it the something Seaport or something? It was in Dublin. It was only one neighborhood. You remember that?
Actually, I don't.
It was because Bob used to talk about it. There was a spot there where everybody all of a sudden put these law firms and stuff. It was like a little tax-free zone in Dublin. It's kind of a carve-out of some kind, where people put all these... That's where you did like the double Dutch sandwich and all that stuff out of that area. I don't know if it was a seaport or something. It was some little area in Ireland that's where they would do all that dastardly stuff. I think people are still doing stuff overseas, and if all of a sudden people are making all this drug money overseas, when I say drug money, for legitimate drugs, I mean, how are we going to deal with that? I mean, kind of arguing with Carl about how are we ever actually to get a drug price down? There's a million different arguments as how we're going to do it, but how are we going to do it?
Well, the only proposal I've seen now is that whatever you sell it for in Europe, you have to sell it in the United States too. And I don't know if that's going to go anywhere. And it's not really the solution to the problem anyway. It's just a way to try and force it down a little bit.
I mean, I don't. How would you, at the end of the day, whether it's patent or I don't know where to start on it. All I know is that somehow or another, somebody can't be charging $100 for something to cost someone. And I don't know how you, between the patent laws, between monopoly laws, between something, I honestly don't know where to start. I just know that if they keep doing it, everybody's broke. I mean, it's kind of where I'm at. Hey, what did you, I sent that thing out about the money supply numbers. Did you read that? Were you surprised?
I didn't get a chance to look at it.
All right. I'll go over with Carl then, because it's, of course, nobody's supposed to talk about that, money supplies. The Cubs escaped with getting two, huh? So
you take a 4-game series and a split. If you would have said we're going to split going into it, you might have had one reaction. But in terms of where they are now, that's a very satisfying split for the Cubs and a very unsatisfying split for the Cardinals.
Yeah, I'm sure after the first two, they thought they were going to get three.
Maybe you win the first two, you're thinking we're going to take this series, and then you don't. Really nice to see Imanaga back and pitching very well.
I really like that guy. He seems like he has personality and everything. I mean, I'm not a massive fan of the ownership, but I don't know when I've seen a more likable team in a while.
They are pretty likable. It's kind of nice, If you want to follow a team, first of all, they should play a likable style, and they seem to be getting back to that a little bit this week, because they have become strikeout kings for after not being that for most of the season, so that's kind of nice, and they've got sort of rekindled the aggressive base running and everything else that they do, so I'm glad to see that. They don't, there's not a lot of guys on that team where you look and go, what a jerk. I really can't think of any. So
no, I can't either.
So it is kind of nice. I've never been one to, get into, well, certainly not as an adult anyway, to get into hero worship for athletes or anybody in the public domain, because when it gets right down to it, you just don't know. There's a public persona, which is not necessarily the same as what the person is really like. So you just don't know. I'm always more interested in how they compete, and as a way of looking at the players and evaluating whether I like them or not. These guys seem to be an okay bunch.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you, part of that, I mean, it might be in the drafting, Kevin, or in the signing or something like that, but if your team wants to be in a situation where we're part of the community, which the Cubs clearly are, we're part of the community, we're going to have Cub charities, the Cub wives are going to do this for something, not that everybody has to do it, it sort of goes along with something you're trying to develop. Not that it means you win at baseball or anything like that, but it's part of a, shall we say, a corporate strategy of some sort to not be at odds with the police or the fans or anybody like that. And it's what you try and develop. And if you're going to do that, you need people that appear to like to play the game, that seem to play hard, that don't be bitching at each other. And oh, by the way, you're not demanding somebody show up for a Cubs charity event. But you're also not going to have some guy who totally denigrates it either. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Even if you don't pull as hard as maybe you'd like everybody to pull, everybody's at least pulling a little bit and not going the other way. Is that a stupid thing to say?
I know what that's like. I worked for a company, a bank, when this goes back to the 1990s in St. Joseph, Michigan, and it was a community bank, and they took that role very seriously, to the point of saying, you know, you're an officer of the bank, we kind of expect you to get involved in the community in some positive way. And so could I have said, nah, not my thing? Yeah, I probably could have. But it would, you know, it was the culture of the bank. So we did, I did some things, you know, there that I thought were, that were very hands-on and helpful. You know, what I didn't want to do is I didn't want to go get on, you know, some not-for-profit organization's board, because if I'm going to volunteer, I'm going to volunteer my actual time, working with the clientele. I'm not going to, and I did a lot of stuff with kids, with, you know, junior high kids. So, you know, that was where I felt comfortable. But everybody else who was a senior level officer, even a lower level officer, was involved in something, and it was, you know, was just sort of expected. Well, the Cubs may be operating that same mode.
Well, I mean, we used to have a lot more people that worked for PTI because it was a lot more transaction oriented, and people did a lot more futures. So we had people that did just futures. Now people do them, but they do them through our IB platform, and you know, it's not. We had a lot of people that traded, you know, grains, but we would do these seminars, and we would have all these. We were part of a seminar situation. We never gave the seminar. Other people did, and they brought them in, but we did like the mock trading and things like that, which everybody loved. You know, trading floor and acting like you were trading and stuff. But there'd be, you know, 50, 60 clients, and maybe we might have a reception here. Yeah, but I didn't want anybody who didn't, you know, put on a trading jacket and wasn't nice with people and actually enjoyed talking to people. I didn't want somebody who didn't want to be there or didn't show up, because that, I mean, our firm was going to be a firm that liked their clients, got along with them. They didn't treat them like dirt, like they were a square peg in a round hole. And you were expected to look good, show up, and get down there and talk to four and five people, and have the four and five people come away saying, that's a pretty good guy, I wouldn't mind doing business with him, or a girl. I mean, I didn't want anything other than that. And I don't know if that's discriminatory or what, but...
It's encouraging people to do good things, because doing good things is a good thing to do. How's that for a turn?
Yeah. It's true. What do you got going this weekend? Anything? You sound better.
I can also convince you that doing good things in the community is also smart business.
Well, it is. I mean, what are you going to do? Get five people pissed off at you that ask them to become a client? I don't think that works, but what do you think? What do you make of this weather? Not that you're the meteorologist. It's not so hot during the day, but in the morning, I pile out of the house at 5 o'clock, it's still 82 degrees. What's that all about?
Well, actually, because I'm still limited, I've been teaching all my classes via Zoom, and this week, I did them all outside on my porch. I put a fan next to me, a big fan blowing on me so that I had some airflow, and it felt really good for me to get the hell outside. And out of the air conditioning. So I, you know, maybe I have a somewhat different perspective, just because I have been so generally housebound.
Well, I'm saying usually when heat bothers people, if it's 95 and it gets down to 70 at night, people can deal with it. Yesterday, I don't think the high was 84. I don't think it dropped 2 degrees last night. That's really unusual for June. Just saying, it's more like St. Louis weather than here. By the way, did you see how many people weren't in the seats in the St. Louis series? I was talking to somebody last night and said, yeah, you can't, if it's 93, you can't sit in the right field seats because the sun's right in your face. That's the area they kept showing nobody sitting there. Why would you want those season tickets, for God's sake?
Well, I don't think you buy them 2 years in a row.
No.
I buy them not knowing better, but you're not doing it again the second year.
What do you, by the way, you were, I don't know if Carl's on a compound. You were being quoted last night at the Thursday night drinking hall table. I said I've had a discussion with my friend Kevin on a bunch of occasions. They were talking about you know, and Shani was there, and Shani always, you know, has all the answers. But funny thing, the older I get, the less answers I have, the more questions I get. But talking about these, you know, these baseball, they get it all figured out. This, you know, this is going to happen here, and baseball is going to sell this, and NFL is going to be on Prime, and everybody's going to have to pay for it. I said, you know, I talk about this with Kevin all the time. It doesn't appear that some of these places have a long-term, short-term real plan. It doesn't seem like they're figuring out where they're going. They're selling some of the same games 3 and 4 or 5 times, it seems. At Major League Baseball, Marquee, blah, blah, blah. Now, and all of a sudden, they don't get it. I got to get Prime or I got to get something Plus. I said, Plus, what are we doing? Is there some connection between the total lack of African-American, U.S. African-American people in baseball now? I don't know of any of the people in baseball now that are Hispanic are from this country, are they? I won't say any, but quite a few are actually,
because if you watch any college baseball, you'll find a lot of Hispanic players.
But I mean, are we growing the sport by making
because it's Florida, because it's Southern California?
Okay, but I'm saying, are we growing the sport? How many people up here that are age 8 to 10 watch baseball versus soccer or something? How many people are even watching basketball?
Well, you killed that though, Chief, because it used to be that it was, you know, it was on network television.
Yeah,
right. And the thing is it's like, I mean, that's one of the things that I, you know, personally, I don't pay for any of these. Okay, I refuse to do it. I don't care enough about sports to spend $100 a month to have access to live sports. Okay, well, guess what? If you want to shoot yourself in the head as an industry, and at some point, the way you get people interested in your industry is they observe what you do, right?
Yeah.
All right. Take all the observation. You know, put a high enough ticket on it that I got to really love it to be willing to buy it, and the 10-year-old never gets exposed to it.
Well, the fight in my.
Well, just to follow up on the thought, because I have a different taste on that compared to Carl. I do like sports enough to spend money on a good sports package, but then I'm sure as hell not going to turn around and go buy Apple TV too, so that I can see some more games. And I suppose I have. I don't think baseball does Amazon Prime. I suppose I could watch that. You know, any more than I'm going to go buy the Peacock Network to pick up an extra Notre Dame game. This is the kind of stuff that, you know, that they're doing that I think is just killing them. That even a hardcore sports fan for me, who likes to watch the NFL, who likes to watch Major League Baseball, and who likes to watch a lot of college sports and so on, that what they're doing is they're pushing me away.
Right.
The fight on the cable and
away. Now they're pushing me away.
Well, give me few seconds here, just kind of review the bidding on how this is going for these people. And I think it has to do with same way with Comcast and the Chicago sports. I'll give you an example that how many people watch CNBC versus Fox Business News versus Bloomberg, and you're probably going to get many more hands up that says CNBC. Now the reason that is, I mean, Dr. J, you know, knew a lot about this stuff. He said to me, you know, reason that is if you get any, the first, once you go from live TV and the antenna to the first cable blush, the first level, cable second grade or first grade, CNBC is on that platform.
Right.
And unbeknownst to you or somebody who never watches it, 25 cents of your cable bill every month is going to CNBC or 50 cents or whatever the hell the number is. Now, Fox Business, now not Fox Channel 12, Fox Business is in the next level, which maybe 70% or 60% of the people have. And then Bloomberg is in the next level, which I've never had. I mean, I never, that's when you want the 150 stations. That's why nobody watches Bloomberg, because you need the next level to get Bloomberg. Now,
I have them all in the same package. I never watch Bloomberg anyway.
Well, but I'm saying, if you cut down to the Comcast basic package, Bloomberg is not going to be on it, and maybe Fox News isn't.
Right.
But you've got the one where you got the sports, Kevin. So you're up big enough. If you have ESPN, you're going to get at least Fox News, because they're in that next donut out. But the thing that with Marquee and the Sports Channel, they want to go to RCN or they want to go to Comcast. Their message is, I want you guys to pay me $1 a month for everybody. But by the way, I want you to raise the cable bill for $1 if you want to, or 80 cents or whatever. I want to be included. but I don't want to be considered the guy that causes the cable bill to go up. The other thing is, Comcast could say to Marquee, I'll tell you what, we'll offer you as a $20 extra. And Marquee goes, I don't want that. I don't want to be paid $20 by 20% of the people. I want to be paid, or by 5% of the people, I want to be paid a dollar by everybody where they don't even notice it. That's the game that they're trying to play here. Because the cable channels are going to go, no, I'm not going to raise it $5 for some lady who's not going to watch a Cub game in her life. So the trick is to get it down to 50 cents or 75 cents where she or somebody who doesn't even like baseball figures out that, well, they just raise the rate for everybody on everything. But if you say you're going to pay $5 more a month on Marquee, you're going to get a revolt on your hands. I mean,
that's the problem is that so part of this, Chief, goes back to the 1980s and the way that cable internet was funded. All right, because prior to cable internet, prior to that time, cable was a one-way thing. All right, you had the cable came into your house, you had a box, and the signal went from them to you.
Yeah.
Okay, and that was it. Now, there's problems with this from a cost point of view because every one of those pedestals that is outside the homes or on a pole, if it's above ground service, all of those consume power. So all those cables actually are energized. All right, so they've now, not 110 volts, but they're all energized because all of those pedestal amplifiers contain electronics. So when you say, okay, now we're going to bring two-way service in, there's a huge problem because I had to buy all those amplifiers. Now I got to buy new ones that go both ways, right? This is, and by the way, they're a lot more expensive because they have to be able to filter out the interference from one going the other way. So you want to sell people $20 or $30 a month internet service, that's never going to pencil. Because you have to go and change every single one of those things out before you can turn it on. And so the way they did this is, well, you used to buy an HBO subscription, right? And you had HBO or you had Cinemax or maybe you had both. And they were kind of expensive on top of your basic cable service. All right. So what they did was they said, oh, well, I got a way to pay for this. We're going to charge $50 for the wrestling match or for the boxing match.
Yep. All the pay-per-views, yep.
Yeah.
All right, and that is the way, because I did some of the study work on this back and before this was cable internet was a thing, and the way the cable companies paid for that infrastructure was on the pay-per-view charges, because now you can push a button on your remote and charge your bill the $30 for the wrestling match or the boxing match or whatever it is. All right, so this is how you got cable internet service. That's how the infrastructure was paid for. But then the problem that comes up is people realize, hey, wait a minute, I can go buy my actual sports. I don't have to get it from the cable company. It's over the internet. I can get it from whoever I want, right? All right. Well, now there's a problem because that cross subsidization, which is a huge distortion in the market, and it gave the cable companies the ability to essentially destroy all their competitors because nobody else had the cross subsidization and they didn't have the rights of way. They couldn't afford to pay for them and put them out there. So, cable internet basically forced all the other business models out of business. And then they got cannibalized, which is why your cable internet service went from $30 a month to $90. All right, because there's no pay-per-view on the back end subsidizing the service anymore. That all went away. Well, now the problem is 100 times worse because now you have a package from YouTube that you can buy. You have a package from this guy you can buy. There's 20 different packages, right? And they're all different. They all have some overlap, but everybody's got one thing that the guy over here wants and the other people don't have it. All right, and sports is one of the big ones, of course. So now what the bleep does everybody do with this thing? right? And the answer is that it's a mess. And
well, I don't care. I mean, whatever anybody wants to charge, the part that...
As long as you can't force me to buy it, I don't care.
Well, the thing that frosts me is one would think if you bought the Major League Baseball package, which supposedly includes every single game, that you'd actually get every single game. Oh, that doesn't.
Oh no, that's not how it works.
Yeah, that doesn't include local. Well, yeah, but that's the one I really kind of want to watch. All right, so you got to buy the Marquee or the Sports Channel or both if you want to be the Sox and the Cubs, which they're both in my cable package, but somebody's paying extra for that. Then they go, wait a minute, this Saturday game it's going to be on somebody else, and you get said, but the part. From my end of it, I don't know. As I said last night, after a couple of drinks, I don't know what the bleep they're doing, and do they? I mean, when they've got people, I'm sitting there with smart people, and I go, how do you do the math that if all of a sudden the Notre Dame game, as Kevin talked about, or the Cub game, is all of a sudden on, was it NBC Plus or somebody or. Or Amazon, or Microsoft's new thing, Apple Plus. Nobody is going to pay the same amount for that commercial because there has to be half as many people watch it. I mean, I don't know what the number is, but if it's half as many people watching and they're going to pay for it, I've heard tell, since I haven't watched them, that all they do is advertise their own stuff on there. That they advertise their other shows, trying to get you to get a subscription. That it's essentially a commercial for them. That they're paying for.
They want you to give it a try. There's a lot of people who will say, I'll try this out. I'll take the 1 month just because I want to see some event, and they're trying to convince you to stay.
Kevin, you were being quoted big time on this because.
But that'll leave room because Hal's here.
Hey, we want to talk a little bit about the money supply stuff. Hey, Kevin, do you have any idea how the Utah Jazz experiment by going back to free TV for the last 2 years has worked out? How big of a hit they've taken, if any?
Nope.
I wonder if there's some way we could find that out.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, for any of this kind of stuff, it you can't long-term operate a business by saying, oh, here's a good opportunity, let's go. If you're any kind of a good strategist, it all has to fit together neatly. You're not just you're not playing grab bag with every little opportunity that comes along the way. And that's what it looks like they're doing with so much of this stuff, is they're just playing grab bag. You go back to the days when the Blackhawks would not put their games on even local cable.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be, because they thought they were giving away too much revenue for ticket sales to do by doing that. Well, yeah, they were also not cultivating a whole generation of fans.
Right. So, yeah.
And they sort of figured that out. And I think that's where you're really looking is, what's going to. I've said this before. It's. Any place where the market is in any way competitive, it gets to be more about market share than squeezing the last dollar out of it. And I think they're just killing their market share by doing with some of these stupid decisions.
Well, if it's I would look at it and I'd say, if I was making a presentation to you three mavens, I would say if we go to cable, or if we do this, we're going to triple our revenue, and we're going to lose 25% of our listenership. Now that's a decision. Or if I say our revenue is going to go up by 15%, and by the way, X number of people aren't going to watch. That's another. But are they even having those kinds of presentations? Do they know the numbers? Is my question. That's the kind of presentations I used to do for people.
If they don't, they probably do. But we'll go back to your example of the MLB, buying the MLB package for the whole year. You can do that if you love baseball. That would be great. But then as soon as you start saying, well, I have an opportunity with Apple TV to go put this on. I have an opportunity with Amazon Prime to go put this on.
Right.
Now you're starting to force people to buy other products. Now what you're doing is you're pushing people away from your core product. You're pushing people away from the MLB package because they're saying, screw that, it's not worth it. They keep moving things off of here. And I think that's where they're being stupid.
All right, well, thanks, Kevin. We're going to talk some money supply here with the two guys that know most about it, Hal and Carl. Just as a backdrop, I think it started this out, Carl, and then Hal wanted to opine in for a few minutes, is I did a little bit of a backsheet math because they finally came out with, what, the April numbers? So right. we're a month behind. And
always.
This, and this is, well, used to be weekly, so not always.
Well, the
but yeah.
MTS is a month behind all time, too, so, you know.
I'm saying it used to be... Used to be weekly, but it's not.
Oh, I know, yeah. But you know, that's it's esoteric stuff that nobody cares about, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do, but I think if you're looking at what's going on in the market now, what do you think? Anyway, the quick numbers I came up with, and this is not being accusatory or anything to anybody, but as people say, it's, you know, it's Biden's inflation or something, whatever. And this don't forget COVID was in here, but from Trump's first time in. And I could do this going back for every president. From January 2017 to January 2021, the money supply was up 46% in those 4 years, which I don't even think happened during the Civil War or World War II. It's an incredible amount and probably caused inflation somewhere of that number. During the Biden years, and this is the weird part that I noticed last month, that's why I kind of called you guys all together, they actually started to go down with that because they realized this is way high. Look at the size of this price bubble. So for the entire 4 years of the Biden administration, it was up 11%. Most of that happened in the first 6 months while they were still doing the COVID crap. And was lower than the peak during COVID, which was like June of 2021 or something. Now, under the current administration, in the 4 months that Trump has been there, it's up another 2%. So it's up, you know, almost a fifth in 4 months of the entire Biden administration. Oh, by the way, we've now eclipsed the record of the COVID top that they were trying to peel off of. So we're right back on this poor money in the system stage, which if anybody doesn't realize what's happened in the stock market, that's it. I mean, there's money dropping on people's desks every day.
Right, Chief, but here's the thing. Who's doing the pouring and who's doing the increasing? Because you do, you know, I mean, it's...
You got to talk more into the mic. You're fading a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. So who's doing the pouring and who's doing the increasing?
It appears to be a worldwide phenomenon, but the Fed is certainly doing it. But
Are they?
Who is?
You don't think Goldman and Citibank and...
I'm saying the
No, hold on. Just a minute. All right? The public, a.k.a. government side of this, is in fact reflected in the MTS and in the Treasury auction data, right?
Well, I mean, Hal, what do you think? I mean, I'll answer the question because...
I am following,
but this is where, man, Hal could be the referee here. Here's the disagreement you and I have. We both know that the Congress is overspending, and that is probably the root cause, okay? But, the root cause, but you can get money that you, to spend more money, and as a government, or probably, well, not as a person, because you can't do it. As a government, you can do three things. You can raise the taxes, which they don't want to do. You can increase the borrowing, because if you borrow, you can spend more, right? Well, now you're dragging money out of the economy in one hand, and you're putting it back in the other. So you don't really get anywhere doing that, right?
I mean, well, actually, you get a negative over the longer term.
Right, you get a negative over the longer term. Or you can print it. Now, the Fed allegedly is independent, okay? They could, I don't know if you'd end up getting assassinated or what, they could say, I mean, Powell could walk in front of Congress like he did this week and say, guys, if you want to spend more than you're taking in, you're on your own. I'm not helping. You better start selling bonds. You better raise taxes and turn around and walk out. But he's not going to do that.
Chief, the Federal Reserve and the balance sheet is published. The Federal Reserve does not print money.
Hell, yes, they do.
No, they don't. Citibank prints money. Goldman prints money. Your bank on the corner prints money.
I understand. Let's not go
through the Federal Reserve does not do.
Let's do that
by law.
They write a check to buy a bond, and the check cashes. Correct.
And now that is a neutral transaction.
Where does the money cashes? It just came out of thin air, is where it came from.
Uh huh. And guess what? What is it? You go buy a house. Do you honestly believe that the bank actually took in the deposits first?
No.
You know they didn't. Well,
they're supposed to maintain the money supply to a point where if in our system, and we could go through this, but I don't want to do it today. We go through how money's created. Money's created every time somebody borrows. We understand that in our system.
Credit is created. It's not money. It spends the same way.
It spends the same way. And the Fed's job, which is a big job, is to maintain the amount of water in the pool so in expansion times it doesn't grow too fast, and in the contracting times it goes down too slow, too fast. That's what they do. But they allow it. They've allowed the money supply to grow in the last few months. Hal, what's your opinion on all this? I mean, they've allowed...
Well, credit is expanding. If you look at total bank lending, it is actually beginning to reaccelerate.
Look at the Z1. I mean, that's where the data is.
And a lot of the reacceleration is, I don't see it in anywhere but margin debt. That's where you see the increase in total bank lending. Consumers are tapped out. I think their credit cards are maxed out. Their borrowing is capping out. Mortgage applications are on a year-long, maybe multi-year decline. So you're not getting in the mortgage realm. You're not getting in credit cards and whatnot, or revolving credit. And industrial and commercial lending is flatlined. So where's the increase? Where's the recent uptick in total bank lending coming from? It's coming from margin debt, and that's probably why.
Which is stocks, right?
Stock market has been, boosted. Yeah.
Well, every big crash in
but
the stock
market. But it's all enabled by the Fed. It's all enabled by the Fed. The Fed, as Carl says, it's a credit expansion. So if there were no Fed, none of this would be possible.
Well, that's not entirely true, Hal. Because as long as a private bank has the ability to issue that without having to actually have reserves behind it. Yeah. Which, by the way, was a thing that Bernanke, that was the 900-pound gorilla in the room that hanky-panky crammed down everyone's throats during the 08 crash. And
well, Bernanke said they don't print money, they just digitize it.
Whatever.
But the thing is, it's the point I wanted to make with Chief, and I read the thing you sent out. Okay, I went through it. I actually looked at the numbers, and yeah, you're right. Those are the numbers.
Yeah.
But here's the thing: when we have people in office who the private market believes are going to strangle them, all right?
Disciplined by the market, yeah.
Well, if you think you're going to get strangled, you're less likely to go out and borrow something to do something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because people don't generally intentionally do things that create losses. I mean, they end up doing things that create losses because they do something that ultimately ends up...
That's what the Fed does. It creates moral hazards that wouldn't otherwise exist.
That's right. Right. Yeah.
Well, so it's the drug dealer, right? And it's the enabler. It's the codependent spouse. It enables Congress. Just imagine what would happen if California had a central bank.
Oh my God.
So far in debt. It'd be incredible, right?
If the states were able to run deficits, which is what that would enable, right? There'd be a problem.
Yeah. The Fed and the fact that the Congress keeps lifting the debt ceiling enables these guys to continue to spend. Look at Senator Thune. You know, the parliamentarian was implemented in, 1935? And nobody fired a parliamentarian until, I think, Byrd fired one in the 1990s or 2000 or 1980s. And then a Republican fired the Democrat he thought was a Democrat parliamentarian, in the 2000s.
Well, now they want to do it again.
Two political firings of parliamentarians. And Thune is doing what? Oh, this democratically hired parliamentarian is not letting us... do the cuts that we want to do. we got to go along with it. You know, it kind of indicates that these two parties are one big uniparty that have found plot devices that make them look different.
Well, why the two kind of weird questions, always weird for me. Hell, you're teaching people all the time. How come you could walk in tomorrow and say, what if everybody took your dollar bills, your Washingtons, and you came out with a Jefferson for every dollar bill? Now, Jefferson's a $2 bill, if nobody knows. And you just doubled the amount of money in everybody's pocket, in their bank account and everything. Now, if you say to people, would that create inflation? They'd go, well, yeah, everything would double in price.
Well, my students understand that, because I always say, well, if you're the only one getting their money doubled, it's not a big deal. But if everybody's getting their money doubled.
Yeah, I'm saying, but everybody understands that. But if you say, and this is the part that I remember.
But that's a misconception, though, in the economy in general, because who gets the doubled money first?
Well, right. That's where I was going.
They get it in the form of margin.
Little Milty, which I'm going to start calling you, which, by the way, is a serious compliment.
Well, Little Milty suffered from the fatal conceit of aggregation.
Yep.
So.
No, little Milty only suffered from one thing.
No, I'm talking about Big Milty. I think.
Yeah, Big Milty only suffered from one thing.
Big Milty.
Is a lot of his quotes are being done 45 years later, when a lot of things have changed. But at the time, because I listened to the guy, I had him for class. Yeah. He was spot on, but he would say the hardest thing about inflation, two things. He goes, two things you got to worry about. One is when it starts, it feels so good. It's like your first beer.
I've never tried heroin, but apparently that first hit of heroin is the most incredible feeling you ever get. And the reason why you keep using it is because you're trying to find that first hit,
and you never find it.
Yeah, well,
and you need bigger and bigger doses to get it. That's what this credit expansion is all about.
He said, well, there's two things that you have to avoid like the plague.
Yeah.
And they're the hardest things to avoid is, one, it feels so good when it starts out. Two is, it's very uneven, and some people really benefit from it, and they don't want it to stop. And I'm going to say that those two statements are 100% true then and now.
Yeah, well, it is. But here's and then the other thing is that if you allow it to get underway, okay, to any significant degree, and we did this in the 1970s, and we've been doing it now for the last 15 years.
I'm going to say since 2000.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but really accelerated after the 08 crash.
Yes, yes.
Okay. And the problem with that is then the next thing that happens, and this is, I mean, this happens in so-called social issues too, okay? I mean, this is the flood the zone technique, which is extremely effective. And it is why, you know, it's what Biden did, it's what Obama did with the illegal immigration thing. You put 10 million people into the country, and I've got this many judges who can hear the cases and potentially say, nope, you're out, that asylum claim is BS, you lied, get out. But if you have 10,000 judges and you put 10 million people into the system with fake claims, it's going to take 100 years to get them all out of there. And so the game is to flood it to a point that the process that's supposed to work doesn't, because it can't. And you do the same thing here. The reason we have this problem with the health healthcare in the United States today is the same thing. And the health insurers, the hospitals, the pharmaceutical companies have all done this. And it starts out as, well, you know, you don't want to push Granny down the stairs. Granny needs this, whatever this thing is, right? But where it ends up is where we are today, which is you can force me to buy your medical care, and you can literally shove it up my backside, and there's nothing I can do about it other than violence to stop it. And the problem is, I can't, you know, going and killing you doesn't stop it. Okay.
Well, let's stick on the other.
There's 70 million other people.
I know, but let's.
Oh, by the way, Tom, cash is how the bottom half of New York lives.
Yes.
My in-laws, they have a rental property near Brooklyn College. Every tenant pays with cash. And then all the contractors, they tell my mother-in-law, I've heard this when she put it on speakerphone, they'll call her up and say, hey, we'll fix your chimney. If you pay us with a credit card, it'll be this price. But if you pay with cash, we won't charge you tax. I would suspect about half the transactions between property owners and contractors in New York City, just from my cursory experience living there for 2 years, is probably cash. And they are not, they are unapologetic about cash because they can avoid all the taxes. You go to a bodega, some of those bodegas, they want cash.
Nobody wants to take cash. Bizarre.
But in New York, man, it's cash. The guys that are selling their services on the street, they're doing cash. And you know, with the ICE going around and deporting people,
it's not
really been that much deportations. By the way, there are white dudes in my neighborhood, in our HOA in Burlington, North Carolina. They're the ones cutting the lawns, and these guys are probably 55 years old cutting lawns. So when you bring 20 million people into the country all of a sudden, demand for
why does everybody use Trump's number when a guy's never said a word in his life that's true?
Well, Tom, there were a lot of people in New York City that weren't here before.
They weren't
here in 2020.
There is some number. I'm not going to debate that. But here, my question. Let's get back since you're here today. And let's lob out there that when you talk about your politicians not wanting inflation, we just went through a pretty rigorous thing.
Well, I think they want inflation, Tom.
That's where I'm getting to. The single biggest
Republican, they want inflation.
The single biggest, in my opinion, benefit from inflation, and the second biggest are the class of people that Trump hangs around with. So the idea
and the
that
Democrats. The Democrat
any,
Party
anybody
is
rich.
A party of really rich people, Tom.
There's no rich
Republicans. They donated $1.5 billion to Kamala.
Okay.
And even Bernie Sanders says the Democrat Party is a party of billionaires. He said that on Joe Rogan.
So Trump doesn't get any money from anybody. All these people that are making money.
No, I'm saying they're all billionaires. They're all friends of billionaires. That's the point that
Sanders
is saying.
Let me give you a tip from a Southside Chicago guy.
As long as you don't bring the knife to the gunfight.
I have buddies that when there's three or four people that might make it to be mayor are all pissed off going, we got to give money to all these idiots. You have to support the winner because the winner gives out the spoils. Why do you think Bezos and all these guys like Trump? Why are they going to his place and giving him oral sex?
Trump gave to both Democrats and Republicans when he was developing property in New York City.
As I'm saying, you pay for the person who has the pass out the grift, and Trump is passing out the grift like nobody ever has. And then Biden did it; they all do it. But I mean, so for you to give all your money to the Republican and have Obama win, the first thing you do is you assess who the hell is going to be the winner, and that's who you give the money
punished.
To. Why would you give
it? That happens. You give it to both.
Yeah, you give it to both, or if you're smart enough to pick the winner, you just give it to the one side, right? But then the next side, you might have a problem if you didn't, you know. This is all. But the point is, if you're in real estate, if somebody's in real estate, what do you want to have happen? You want interest rates low and you want inflation high. Guess what? Trump's in real estate.
Well, yeah, and as I've pointed out since he ran the first time, he's a commercial property developer.
Yeah. And God knows what, and he's also a Bitcoin maven now.
But that's who he is. Okay,
we've never had anybody running business out of the White House before, like to this level. Nobody.
Now hold on a minute. I think you need.
All right, don't bring up Hunter Biden. He's
no. What I'm saying is we haven't had anybody doing it as explicitly, but anybody that thinks that the other people. You know, that the Bushies and the stuff.
Well, the Bushies might have been an exception, yeah.
And Halliburton and, because the thing is, they're just better, my opinion, okay, they're just better at hiding it.
Yeah. But Obama and Clinton made a bunch of money. Obama made money, him and his wife writing books and crap like that. That's not the same thing.
But the thing is this, again, it's just better at hiding it and who you're beholden to. okay? If you think that Obama actually wrote the Obamacare bill, of course he didn't, right? I mean, we now know who it was because the people that did it actually have come forward and they've taken credit for it.
Well, they also got the boondoggle of that website, too, right? They had to spend
there was billions of dollars that was thrown
and
in
the
his
person
cronies.
That fixed it were friends.
But you didn't see Obama that we know of having some kind of a people who donated to some Bitcoin. Did you read the numbers and whatever coin that was, or the people at the big dinner? Something like...
Oh, yeah, they said it was crap, too.
Well, but how do you... Isn't there like... There's like... Was it like 100 people that have made how many million dollars on the coin and 750,000 people are down money? How does that even work? I don't know anything about how those things work. How could that even happen?
The way it works for all these things, which is it's true for Bitcoin, too. The guys that originate it, they paid nothing, right? And what did they do to
it? And they own it.
Yeah, but what did they do to get any of it? Absolutely zero, right? And yet, it goes from 10 cents to $100,000. That's a hell of a gain, right?
Can I change the subject for just a second? By the way, SP futures are up 17, NASDAQ futures up 80. Looks like we're doing a record today. What do you guys make of this conversation I had with this guy the other night? He was kind of a character, but a nice guy. I just met him. And he was telling me he had a million in this and a million in that and whatever. Sometimes when you see somebody like that, on one hand, you'd love to have them as a client. On the other hand, you wonder if you could ever pin them down on what they actually wanted you to do for them. You know, that's a problem.
Right.
In order to be good at whatever you do, as a money manager, you got to be on the same page of what you want me to do for you. You know, I had one guy years ago, stupid, the market was up, I don't know, actually the market was even. And we were up like 4 or 5, which is, with protection. So I'm thinking, it's 4 or 5 is not the greatest, but it's way better than nothing. And by the way, he was protected the whole year. He was never down. I thought we did a pretty good job. And the guy goes, well, I could have put my money in housing instead of giving it to you. And I said, well, I get what would have happened one day if you would have seen 100 grand come out of your account because I bought an old bungalow to fix up. He goes, well, you couldn't do that. Well, then. Don't compare me to housing, Jesus.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, but the guy was talking about the Bitcoin phenomenon, and he was talking about how the second biggest business in the world is illegal drugs, which I don't know if that's true or not, but is it? I don't know.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, I couldn't debate him on it, but I have no idea how you quantify that, but let's say he's right. He goes, all these guys are doing their transactions and this other stuff. He goes, by the way, if you got in early enough, you made more money on that stuff than you even did on the transactions. He goes, you don't think these people are ever going to let it go down. And I'm thinking, I was kind of mentioning that with Kevin, and Hal, I'd love your opinion on this. Does that mean if you're big enough now, you're bigger than the market? Because, boy, if that's the truth, I got to change all the way I invest. Because when I started the business, people used to cackle that even governments doing currency transactions weren't bigger than the market. Is it true now that somebody can create a stock or a tulip or a fake stock and just run it up, make themselves $1 gazillion and have enough power that it never goes down no matter what?
Well, the Bitcoin thing, as I mentioned before, is there's a bunch of people who think governments throughout the world are irresponsible, their fiat currencies are being made.
All right, can I ask you, I'm not going to interrupt, but can I ask you one thing? Separate the transactional piece of it from the value piece. The transactional fees, you got no argument at all for me.
Well, people like it because it's convenient for buying and selling stuff.
Right, but I'm saying...
can't know...
I understand that. Let's leave that piece out. I'm with you on that. The question is, what's the value of it? I mean,
value of it is whatever buyers value it.
I'm saying...
Government doesn't dictate value.
Do you disagree with me now that it's become an artificial stock? It's no...
I don't think so. I think it's the subjective values of individuals. Individuals, if they believe the governments throughout the world are devaluing their currencies, what are they going to do? They're going to buy gold. They're going to buy silver.
I understand it. But I'm going to say the last 90% of people that bought Bitcoin bought it because it's going up. They have no intention to ever use it as a currency.
Chief, same thing.
Well, if that's the case, that's the case.
Yeah.
They're free to do so.
I'm with you. Carl, you're clairvoyant as usual. I had this discussion with my brother the other day. He goes, I can't believe the market is valued this high. And I said, you're not going to get any argument out of me, but just think for a second, the artificial stocks are going up too. You can't, how can you make an argument that NVIDIA is too high if you can't say Bitcoin sweaters? At least NVIDIA's got a company.
Well, they're all made too high by central banks.
Yeah, well, that's why you're on here.
Right. But here's the thing, you know, the argument that you have, you know, that your friend made, okay, is basically that once you get there, once you create this, that essentially the invisible hand thing goes away because it becomes an invisible sledgehammer, that if something happens, the damage to the government structures will be so large that they will not allow it to occur. Okay.
I think that's a good way of putting it, by the way.
Well, that's the argument that he's making. Yes. Okay, is that the invisible hand, you know, the Adam Smith stuff, becomes an invisible sledgehammer that's poised over the head of the Speaker of the House and the President of the United States and the majority leader in the Senate and da 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 da. The problem with this is that the when you build these structures, they become exponential beasts. And, you know, a fly requires a very small number of calories to take in every day to sustain itself, right? Why does not a fly grow to be the size of an elephant? And the answer is that the processing efficiency of a fly's body is too low for that to work. It reaches a point where that doesn't work anymore. That's why it fails. The same thing happens with, why does not a tree grow to the sky? Same reason. People think that there is something magical about asset classes, and this has been shown throughout history. It keeps happening. People, you know, we relearn these lessons the hard way, usually about the time that the last guy that learned them the last time is dead.
Yeah, well.
All right. And so, well, you know, I mean, memory only works as long as it continues to be reinforced. And we are exactly where the breakpoint is in the current cycle is impossible to know in advance. But the idea that your friend has put forward and many others, and I've heard this from a bunch of people, that this is a sustainable thing, that this will continue. Look, we went from 4% of GDP in one sector of the economy to 20. All right?
Yep.
The only way you can do that is if you can find a way to make people pay someone else's bill. And the same thing is happening in so many other sectors. I mean, you look at the situation that we have. We just had, we've had very hot weather for June, right? I mean, not unreasonably hot for summer, but, you know, we're not in El Nino or La Nina, and therefore the normal jet stream pattern that, you know, that sets up during the summer when you're one way or the other isn't. That's why you get these kind of anomalous things. Okay, now later in this will almost, we're in the middle between a transition between El Nino and La Nina, and that will probably end up going one direction or the other, toward, you know, July, August, and then that pattern will reestablish the way that it normally does for those two things. But that's the reason you got this heat dome, all right? And the thing is, though, is that you had, you know, we just had Cub here, you know, our power company, is saying, hey, you know, if you can cut your electrical usage down a little bit, you know, that would be helpful. Well, Cub doesn't generate power. They buy it from TVA. TVA is, you know, is the supplier in this part of the country, right? That's they're the generator. And the number of people that are on Nextdoor yelling about, oh, you know, those thieves, you know, my bill is $250. F them. If I want to crank my air conditioner, I'm going to do it. I'm like, how many of you people were cheering on the shutdown of the 15 coal plants that TVA had in this region, most of which have now had wrecking balls taken to them, so they can't be turned back on even if you wanted to? Because they're not.
Yeah, the ones in Chicago sure have.
Well, they're piles of rubble, okay? You can't say, oh, yeah, we'll start that one back up. And a
politician would say you can't.
Well, yeah.
Well, you know, the one that came down here in Chicago when the stack came down, I used to work for Pullman when Swindell was there. Don't call it a chimney, it's a stack.
Yeah.
When the stack came down, it created so much dust that the people were so pissed off about the demolition, almost as pissed off as they were about the coal plant. Hey, Al, in the boat of you guys, I mentioned earlier, but now I have the numbers actually up in front of me. NVIDIA, you know, and I'm sure, and you know, Hal, you were talking about people in New York trying to get away without paying some taxes by doing cash stuff. Every man up until, you know, maybe the top 10% is doing whatever he can, he or she can, to work their way through this. You know, yeah. Be it a coupon, be it, I mean, I can't wait. I shop at Myers, you know, and I could afford this if I felt like it, but I can't wait to get my 10,000 Myers points so I can get a dollar off on gasoline and I run my tank down to where I got like a gallon and a half left and save $24 and I'm happy with myself. Now, I mean, people shouldn't have to do that or whatever, even want to do that, but what does it say to you just mentally that on the other end of the shtick, and Carl brought it up, NVIDIA, stock's up $13 in the last 2 weeks. They got 25 billion shares outstanding, so that's roughly 250 plus another 75. $325 billion in market cap. It's up in 2 weeks, and I'm looking at the largest 20 S&P 500 companies by market cap in 2000. They went up more last 2 weeks than Exxon, which is the highest valued company at $302 billion, was worth in 2020. How does the same person who's a chump like me trying to get a buck off on his gas, how does somebody even understand how much money that is, or how much value that is? And how do you even, you know, somebody at NVIDIA who has some huge bonuses, by the way, their chairman just started selling his stock.
He did.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
But how do you even have your students connect the two dots, Carl? I can't.
Well,
credit expansion starts with the Federal Reserve, and it continues with the bank lending, and the bank lending is coming from margin debt.
Right.
So you have all this margin debt that's just flooding into stock markets, and that's inflating these. And the economy's not doing very well right now. It doesn't look like the labor market's doing all that well. GDP came in at negative growth in the first quarter. I think it was revised downward.
Yeah, well, it was. It was neg 0.5, which was
and prices rise for three reasons. I don't call average prices rising inflation. Prices rise for three reasons: inflation, which is an excessive expansion of the money supply by central banks. Two, supply is reduced. Supply can be reduced by restraints that government places on the economy. And three, higher demand. I don't think we have higher demand. I think we have less supply, and I think we have, we have this less supply, which is causing incomes to shrink, and I think that is, what was I going to say? Yeah, I think that's the reason why inflation is cooling, is because you have.
By the way, your PCE just came in real hot here this morning.
I was going to say.
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
Well, the deflator in the GDP. Revision was 3.8.
Wow,
that's not cooling.
Yeah.
Well, the PCE was 2.7, so they're not cooling at all.
Well, I'm talking about cooling in terms of CPI, right?
Well,
not inflation. Prices and not inflation.
Well, I understand that, Hal, but again, the CPI is a BS statistic.
Oh, it is.
And it's not that they're lying; it's that they deliberately designed it that way.
Yeah,
and you know the revisions over the years have all been to suppress what is otherwise impact that would show up in that number. I mean, the owner's equivalent rent is the biggest one by far. Simply,
it's very objective. Yeah, it's very.
By the way, okay, you guys, another little scribble I did here because Carl's always ragging, and I am as well, about the 6.5% hospitalization piece when it's 20% of the economy.
Right.
I actually did a scribble of a buddy of mine, Carl, who's on, and Hal, who's on Social Security. And we went through the number he pays to the government for Part A or Part B, which comes out of your Social Security. So you got to add that back into the Social Security. If you take that, his supplemental, his 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 drug coverage, which went from 35 to 74 this year, doubled. And his he has a concierge position, which you got to pay now in this big city to have a physician. So that costs him like $300 a month. And I also added in the $300 a month he pays for his Eliquis, even with insurance. So it comes out to like his medical basket, without even being sick, 42% of his basket.
Yeah, but
The CPI healthcare component will probably show
six.
A decline, right?
Six. Well, I mean, it's 6%. Yeah. So for this guy, it's 42.
Yeah.
Well, right. But see, here's the Eliquis thing is just one example of many.
Well, it's not the only drug he's on. It's just the one he...
Well, I understand that. But here's the thing. The vast majority of these, I mean, India is the drug manufacturing capital of the world. The precursors, to a large degree, are coming from China. But this is, you know, everyone's, oh, you know, the tariffs. Except the first sale is where those are assessed. That's the supply.
Yeah, when it exit the country, yeah.
Well, that's right. Yeah. So the precursor goes from China to India where it's manufactured into the drug. So if somebody tries to tell you, well, you know, the Eliquis is $7,000 a year without insurance in the United States. By the way, it's 140% tariff, and you know, it's all of a sudden going to be $20,000. No, it's not.
No,
because and the reality is that you can for $60 U.S. you can have 100 of those pills from an Indian pharmacy. There's about a dozen.
Why is there no discount on Eliquis in Canada? There isn't.
Well, you know what? This is the essence of the problem.
Well, the system in Canada is centralized, right?
Right. The system in Canada is socialized.
The third party payer is the government.
Well, right. Give me 1 second here, guys, before you go on. On the changes, the $185 the guy pays to the government back on his for Part B was $173. So that's 5.5% increase. Right. The party pays, I think he's got United Health. That went from 274 to 337. So do the math there. That's about 20%. The only part that stayed steady is the part he pays his concierge, but his the Part D, which is the pharmacy, went from 57 to 74. So what's that? That's like 20%. So he's averaged somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20% increase from last year.
Yeah, Chief. As I have pointed out...
The Eliquis had not gone up, so...
Yeah. Well, okay, but as I've pointed... Yeah, but the reason that it went up is because a whole bunch of other stuff that is in the basket, you know, when you... Again, he's not using those drugs, but somebody else is.
Right.
And he's being forced to pay the other guy's bill, all right? And as I have repeatedly pointed out, and it was a major focus when I wrote Leverage after the crash... And I've been hammering on this since the 1990s because I saw this trend starting when I was running MCS, right? And that I was the one writing the checks to the health insurance companies for all the people that worked for me. And when you create a monster like this and you allow this kind of cost shifting, number one, you destroy the competitive price signal, okay? Because if I like to have two adult beverages a day, if I've got to pay for it, maybe I choose Miller's. Right, I inexpensive beers, but they're adult beverages, and they're in a bar, so I get my social exposure. If you let me make you pay my bar tab, I always start having two shots of single malt scotch. And not only do I like this, but the bartender loves it. And the supplier, the supply chain for the liquor manufacturers, all the way up the line to the guy who makes the scotch, they love it. And every one of them is going to scream if you try to do anything to stop it.
Well, I get that, but the difference is...
But you have to stop it, Chief, because it's an exponential process, and eventually...
I understand that, but if you when it's your health, it's a little bit... I mean, hell, what... How do you,
no, it's not.
Well, okay. Let's go into that on Tuesday. But the idea that we can all... I mean, hell, let me ask you a question. When you give out a test to your gang. When we used to have tests at University of Chicago, and this is weird because I even get guys on the show here who are real smart about economics, is every time you talk about an economics answer, you almost have to define the environment. Every test at University of Chicago, they would say, assume perfect competition,
right.
Assume this, assume that.
Which, of course, is never true.
Well, you can if you're talking corn. You can if you're talking probably barbershops. You can actually if you're talking worldwide oil.
I mean, hamburgers and tacos.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably name.
My triplet son, Wes, he's obsessed with logos, company logos, and exits, and he wants to open up a Taco Time or a Del Taco here in Burlington. He goes, Hal, or Dad, your tacos taste just like Taco Bell. And I go, well, because tacos are, you know, they're
tacos
pretty
homogeneous. Tacos are tacos.
You know what I would explain to your son, which you wouldn't want to hear? If you get big enough, McDonald's, a Taco Bell, or anything, I actually had somebody who worked for McDonald's, and he was probably the major guy behind Ronald McDonald House, you know, for the people going to the hospitals. Yeah. But he worked for McDonald's forever. Is when they do a taste test for everybody. Now your son is going to say, "That's a pretty crummy taco," or "It doesn't have any of the spices that I like," or this, that, the other thing. McDonald's doesn't want that at all.
No, they want it to be the same every single.
But they also want nobody to not like it.
Right.
They don't want anybody
they
to...
They don't care if they're crazy about it. They just don't want anybody not to like
nobody,
it.
Nobody, if you walk in to get a Big Mac or a Quarter Pounder anywhere in the country, first of all, I don't know, you guys are not quite as old, but we used to like to drive for vacation. And my mother, you know...
McDonald's is a restaurant for kids. It's like Star Wars.
Well, okay, but it started out as if you drove around in the 50s and early 60s, my mother would say, "I don't care where we stop for lunch, but they better have a clean bathroom."
Yep.
And if you drove through a smaller town, you found
Don't drive on the highways and expect a clean bathroom at those gas stations.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's right. Or a restaurant. What McDonald's did was they made you could stop there. You were going to get something that was edible, was not some tacos that were too spicy that you didn't like, or anything. And by the way, when Ray Kroc used to go in and inspect the McDonald's, he walked right by the corner and walked right into the bathroom.
Yep.
And if it wasn't perfect, there was hell to pay.
And because a gas station in the West, that you walk in, they got the fresh smelling baked bread. Right. And then the bathrooms are like these cathedrals where you could have your funeral.
Yeah.
That's how clean they
are. Well, the other thing, so I actually was invited. I did some stuff out at McDonald's Oak Brook campus, out there just outside Chicago. And at one point, I happened to be out there on some other business, and they actually invited me to sit down and do one of their taste test things that they do in the blind room. Okay, so what they'll do when they're evaluating suppliers is, let's say that today what they're testing is ketchup. Okay, very simple, right? You think. So the carousel rolls, and you can't see it because you're sitting on the other side of the wall, and there's some french fries there and some ketchup. And you dip a french fry in the ketchup and you eat it, and then it rolls back around, and then the other one rolls back around. And it comes back, there's, you know, still french fries and a ketchup. They're not interested in which you prefer. What they want to know is whether you can detect a difference,
or if one you don't like, because then they're going to scratch that one.
Well, but if you can,
they want a zero standard deviation.
Yeah.
So the entire point of what they're doing there is, I don't care where you go into the McDonald's. It is going to be the same thing.
Yep.
Starbucks operates on the same principle. It's why they burn their coffee on purpose, their beans.
Yeah.
They over-roast them on purpose. And the reason is that it will never be a great cup of coffee, but it will be the exact same cup of coffee, no matter which Starbucks you go into.
Yeah, I can't buy a Starbucks. I can't.
I think it's awful.
Stuff. I think it's terrible.
But I also know if you actually decide that that's what you like,
like coffee with no sugar, no cream.
Well, if you
I
like
can't
it.
Drink it.
Yeah, but if you just, it's like a, I mean, if you get to the point where you like Guinness Stout, every other beer is going to taste like water.
Well, Guinness Stout is horrible in the can, but I suspect when you're at the brewery in Ireland, it probably tastes phenomenal.
It's not the same. It's not the same product. They say it is, but it isn't.
I think it tastes horrible. I'd rather have a oatmeal stout.
Yeah,
oatmeal stout.
I don't care for it either.
I don't drink that much beer anymore, but I always loved it out of the keg way more than out of the can.
Yeah.
Anyway, also my bottom summation for your son is, he could probably have the world's most successful taco stand if he has really good tasting, maybe spicy tacos, but he's never going to go national.
Yeah, never. Well, yeah.
By the way, I have the personal income and outlays numbers are out. They're bad.
Yeah.
They're like crash level bad. Of course, the market's ignoring it.
Well, the market's ignoring that because the credit expansion is going to continue.
Right. Right, but there, I mean, but it's really terrible. All right, I mean, where we are right now is it disposable personal.
That's why the markets are probably up. They're probably thinking, "Oh, we're going
to." You know what's kind of weird here, though, Hal? Because we got to go. We have lots to talk about to both of you guys next week, because we got to talk a lot on Tuesday, Carl. Because Friday we're off.
Right.
Actually, the margin debt is going down the last 2 months. I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah, but it's gone. I mean, that's like, you know, walking up the Empire State Building.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I'm with you.
I came down one floor. I'm descending.
Yeah, well,
I'm down one floor on 110 floor Empire State. Yeah.
Usually, though, when the market, I won't say crashes, but has a correction of some kind, we're usually right at like a record top, though. So why were we at a record top in January, $937 billion, and now we're down to 850? What could possibly have caused that?
Well, I think the economy is slowing, and people probably have a little less income.
Yep. Well, all right.
Well, the DPI numbers, I mean, and the skew as to where the changes in monthly spending are coming from. This graph is kind of interesting in this report.
Carl, what do you got for restaurants and bars? Every place I've gone into for 6 weeks say the business is cratering.
You know what? Around here, I can tell you the places that normally are busy. I went to have a pint yesterday, and there were four people in the building, and it was me and the other.
Yeah.
I mean it. I know the people that run the joint, and they've said that it's this last month has been unusually slow, and I believe it.
Went to IHOP Tuesday, and there was nobody in the restaurant.
Yeah. I think people are tapped out. They're out of extra cash.
Yeah.
Well, and they've been raising the prices to cover for it, which makes it even worse.
Credit card debt.
Yeah.
Well, that's the
credit card debt is capping.
Well, yeah, and prices have been going up, and people are just like, well, you know what? I'm going to go buy a six pack at the store instead.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean it's we'll talk about it next week, guys. You got anything crazy this weekend that I can live vicariously through you?
Not that I know.
Nothing really. Maybe going swimming at the HOA swimming pool.
Well, there you go. Got one of my longtime friends and clients is having a birthday party in Crystal Lake, which means I got to drive to Orland to pick up Audrey. And then it's another 67 miles to Crystal Lake and back.
I know where that is. Yep.
I guess.
Is it 3 miles away?
Yeah. I guess it's no booze for me. So I hope it's an engaging conversation because no way I'm having any cocktails and driving back 70 miles in Chicago's expressway.
Well, try an oatmeal stout, Tom. You'll love it. Okay. Oatmeal stout.
Oatmeal stout. All right. Well,
they are good.
Yeah, but if it's 95 degrees, it's not stout beer weather, you know.
Oh, yes,
it is. Ice cold oatmeal stout with a frosted glass. It's pretty good.
Oh, God. All right, guys. Have a good weekend. SP Futures up 12. NASDAQ Futures up 44. Again, we're up not as much as we were earlier, but I still think we might get a record today. We will see. Even though the numbers keep coming out are crummy now, but it doesn't seem to bother anybody. Back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.